Thanks for joining us. We're here for Queer Christian Family Values podcast. I'm your host, Alex Birchnell, and I've got a co-host here, Andrew Cox. And if you listen to our last podcast, we talked about why Paul was pissed. And that was in like Galatians and all that fun stuff. And then today we're going to talk more about Romans. And really, it's going to be Andrew that's going to be talking, and I'll just kind of ask some questions here and there. But before we dive into it, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. We've got Manny, Diana, Jamie, and Rebecca. Without your help, we wouldn't be able to pay for our website and all that other fun stuff. So thank you. And I guess we'll get into it. So Andrew, why don't you start us off?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you so much for letting me kind of take the lead on this one. I'm so excited for this. I want to try something for the video. Okay. I'm going to turn this sideways. Tell me if this looks better.
Okay. Man. Yes.
Is that better?
That looks a lot better. It actually flipped with it too, so.
Fantastic. Great. All right. Let's do this. All right. I got some layers for you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say stuff at you, okay. And I'd love for you to respond. Just follow with me here.
Okay, cool. Where going so on a journey.
Yes. I'm not this could be Wizard of Oz. This could be Dazed and Confused. Either way, this is a journey. So I'm hoping for the best. All right. So let's start from the top. We are in the New Testament, mm-hmm. right? The New Testament is a compilation of letters and narratives, not unlike ancient Greek odysseys,
okay. That
piled together create this overarching story. Mm-hmm. About Jesus, but also the followers of Jesus and what they set in place to be the foundation of what we consider the Christian world today.
Okay, following.
Yeah, so, and now you know that, I know that, but maybe some people don't know that. So, you know, I thought we should just, you know, start from the basics, just go through it.
Foundation.
One of the primary structures, arguably about half of the New Testament, out of all the letters in the New Testament. So that makes it about almost a fourth of the Bible, okay, is Paul's letters.
Yes.
Okay, so Paul, well, the epistles in general. Epistle, all right, quick rant. I'll do a few of these.
Yeah, that's fine. It wouldn't be you without those.
I can't help it. Okay, epistle is one of those words that should have just been translated, but we decided that we got to a translation that was holy enough of the word, and we just stopped there. Epistle just means letter. That's all it means. It means it's a letter, like a letter you get from your grandma, you know, because she hasn't figured out email yet. Like, that's what we got here. We got letters, okay? We got these letters, and Paul, partially because he's got street cred and he's a convict, right? Because partially because he's in prison a lot, Paul writes letters.
Yes.
It's the first Zoom sermon. He's broadcasting from far away to his congregation to let them know things that they should know. Okay. So it's a social distancing sermon is how we should view Paul's epistle.
So he was social distancing before it was cool.
he was. Now, granted, it was enforced by the largest empire in the world at the time. But yeah, you know, well, okay. So maybe that's a little more of a crossover than I was aware of. Yeah. So we're currently social distancing by rights of the largest empire in the world at the moment, China. Just kidding. So. That was cheap, but it was fun for me. So I'm glad we're still doing this. Okay, so Paul wrote these letters. The first thing I want you to do is I want you to... Can I do this with you?
Sure, go for
Alex,
it.
Alex, I want you to forget for a second that the Bible is a holy religious text.
Okay.
Just forget that for a second. Because I think... And tell me if you agree with this. I think because we treat it as a holy text... we stop treating it like it's written word.
Oh, I can totally agree with that. Yeah, completely. Like, we don't read it.
Why.
Well, I was actually having a conversation with, I think it was either a Patreon subscriber or somebody in one of our groups, and they were talking about how we can't just read the Bible without trying to find some like something holy about it. We're always trying to like nitpick and find that holy scripture within the Bible. We can't just read it for what it is. A lot of people don't treat it as that. So like if we take letters, I think we talked in a prior episode where like if your grandmother mails you a letter, you're not going to sit there and say, oh, look, she used the 7 times. It must mean something. So it's kind of in that aspect of people are sitting and nitpicking and saying, oh, they used you or you all instead of blah. And we can't just sit there and read the Bible. Yes, you know, it does have holy value to many of us, but it's still a story and it's still letters. And there's a time and a place for each individual thing. And I'm always about context. And if we don't hold those while we're reading it, we're kind of missing the whole point. We're missing a lot of stuff because we're sitting there trying to nitpick everything.
Yeah, like, I'm going to try and say this well the first time. Let's see what happens. I think because we treat the whole Bible as holy, we miss the holiness in it.
I completely agree. That's a profound statement.
Well, good. So, like, the truth is, all right, let's just go there.
Go for it. Dive in.
Okay. Paul wrote letters. Now, letters, if you think about what a letter is, mm-hmm. a letter is a thing where you're trying to get a couple of points across, and you probably have like a, if I wrote a letter, it'd be a little ADD, and you'd have a few one more things at the end. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like a couple, one more thing.
Oh, and by the way, or PSS or something.
Exactly. And Paul does that. They didn't have the whole like formal structure, and now I actually want to research why we have the formal structure of letters.
Oh, no.
But it's just, I'll next episode, guys, tune in and we'll talk. No, so Paul does this whole, now before I close out, now that I've wrecked your world for a little bit, now mm-hmm. now that I have Galatians, now that I've told you about how
now,
we need
now that
to,
I've like castrate one way or the other
rabbis amongst you. It's just, Philippi, now that I've told you to give a whole lot of money to a church that's about to experience a famine, Let me say a couple parting words. So Paul has PS and PSS. Mm-hmm. He has these postscripts that he throws in, and he does it in Romans 2. But by and large, there's really he's trying to say one thing. Mm-hmm. He's trying to say one thing, and not because he's a great, not because he read Andy Stanley's book about communicating for a change, but because he's a Greek Jew in the Roman Empire. He has studied rhetoric. He has mm-hmm. studied the Pentateuch. He has sat at the feet of Gamaliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was the royal council of the Pharisees. So Paul is a ridiculously educated person. And so what he wants to do is create a letter that when read to a crowd. By the way, guys, if you haven't listened at our other episodes, these letters weren't read because only like 4 to 6% of the Roman world was literate. Mm-hmm. Well, what's actually happening is these guys had these letters read to them. So these letters were on stage. These letters were theater. They were performed. They were, there was an author that would stand beside a scribe and go, yeah, when you say that part, you should know I'm real mad. So you really need to lean into it. Now this part, however, pull back.
Make a little soft.
And that's the way
know.
Paul presented it. Oh, exactly. So, so when we look at these letters, we need to be aware, that there's a point that was supposed to be expressed, and you probably don't get the whole point if your pastor preaches on chapter 1. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to read all of it.
Now, so that's exactly right. So that gets complicated for us, right? Because mm-hmm. we're in a, now, you know, I don't know what your Catholic listenership is, but, you know, just we're in a predominant Protestant world, right? Where sermons are long, but even though sermons are longer and they're not homilies, by and large, these sermons that we hear are sermons that present small sections of scripture, perhaps not in the way that they were supposed to be presented originally. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And plus, half the time, it's like one or two verses that we're really even preaching on anyway.
Right, right, right. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, we're thrilled. Well, that's not how we say it. We say, well, brothers and sisters.
Yes, brothers and sisters.
They're just like, and then you hear the organ. I don't know how to do an organ sound. But just because it's been that long, quarantine is such a long process. It's just, we're gathered here today. No, that's a funeral.
Yeah, I know. I was like, wait, what kind of service are you talking about?
Or
they'll like talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, for instance. They want to talk about, so they were trying to like rape these angels, but they won't say that. They'll say the homosexuals.
They really liked Freddie Mercury, and they watched too much Bugs Bunny cartoons, and and seducing that poor Elmer Fudd. Like, ain't that just like the devil? Ain't that just like the devil to seduce us into a forest of unknown things where she's just trying to hunt and kill for our families? It's just, today we're talking about the homosexuality in cartoons, which is the devil trying to
at Lady
steal
Gaga.
Our children. I'm sorry.
I love how immediately we're like the most redneck Southern person we can think of. But I mean, that's what we're surrounded by. We're in Tennessee, so I mean, it makes sense.
How can I say this? I understand homophobia. Yeah. I don't understand it when it becomes a sermon analogy. That's when it just like steps outside of the world for me a little bit. It's just like Fred Flintstone. They called him Twinkle Toes. Guess you didn't wonder why. Just protect your children. I can't do it.
Yes.
Holy crap! What are we even talking about? Where are we?
Romans? We need to talk about Romans.
Holy crap! You use the term co-host. You might want to retract that after this episode.
He's like, okay, I'm a driver, and I don't know where the road is. It's just.
I'm so sorry. Well, it's the Roman road.
It is.
One way.
Hey,
that
segue.
People read. Hey, look at that. We did it. That's one way people read Rome. Okay. All right. I'm just gonna stop presenting stuff in chunks. I'm just gonna say it.
Okay. Cool. Go for it.
Romans is not more important than the other letters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We present Romans as though it's this like foundational letter for all Christian theology, but it's not. Now, granted, because it's one of Paul's letters, he's trying to address a problem that needed to be responded to by a letter. And the problem in Romans is theological in nature. It is. It's a theological letter that needs a theological response, but that doesn't mean it's the theological foundation of the Bible.
Yes.
It doesn't mean it's the theological foundation for Christianity.
Yeah, it's just a letter. Now, it's not like he's prophesying or anything.
That's exactly right. It's a letter. Now, I will say that I fall under the school of thought, and, you know, people may not know this is a school of thought. I fall under the school of thought that the foundational letter of the New Testament is Ephesians. And I'd love to tell you why.
Go for it.
Okay, great. So, because if you didn't want me to, you could just totally...
No, I'm kidding. Go
and
for it.
Say, no, we'll cut this part and we'll just do something else. Okay, so Ephesians seems to, by best we can tell, have had a school of scribes. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The Ephesian letter... Now, for those of you that have not read a lot of Paul's letters, I encourage you to read them in one sitting. Just sit down, crank them out like a Netflix binge. Just do it. And I'm serious. Like, and what will happen is you'll be like, oh, holy crap. Yeah, I totally get what he's trying to get at here because I read it all in one chunk instead of just doing like this guided reading with my youth pastor. And now, youth pastors are great. I'm not saying they're not. But it's one of those... We divide the Bible into chunks to try to make them more digestible. But when we do that,
oh, I think you muted yourself.
Oh, no.
Okay, no, I can hear you now. You're good.
Great. Fantastic. We try to make the Bible into digestible chunks, but when we do that, we remove from the Bible the way it was trying to communicate with us. And the way the Bible was trying to communicate with us was in letters. So if you want to understand what Paul means in any of his letters, or Peter or James or whatever, you need to read the whole dang thing. And once, just the whole thing, the way that a Civil War general would read a letter from the front lines, you know, it's like, oh, what's happening? You know, it's just, you don't read like the first chapter and go, those three paragraphs are really
make everything sense. Yeah.
I'm going to meditate on those, Alex, for the next couple days and really, really think what that frontline soldier could have meant.
That's like think about it in like English class or something. You know how growing up in high school and you had to read books and stuff. And a lot of kids would use...
I have heard of books and stuff.
Okay, cool. People would use Spark Notes, especially for the books that were harder. And so if you only read a couple pages of the Spark Notes, you're not going to know what the heck is what it's about. I mean, you still have to read, even though you're not reading the book, you still have to read all the Spark Notes to know what it's about. I know that's maybe a weird analogy, but that's where my head went with it.
No, you're right, though. The problem is we almost do like the, you know, bizarro world of Spark Notes in the Christian church.
Yes.
Where we go, you know, instead of condensing it down, let's blow it the hell up. Let's make it so much bigger for no good reason. Like, let's take this one chapter and make it the whole point.
Yeah. Cherry picking.
That's awesome. I'm really glad that you said that because I remember... there was this fantastic young, we're on Queer Christian Family Values. This just so happened to be a lesbian, so it's on topic. So I was sitting there talking to her, and she was really struggling with, her family is from Greenville, Tennessee. And for those of you in Tennessee, you know that Greenville, Tennessee is like Johnson City, Tennessee, or other areas of Tennessee that are the proper Tennessee, but it's a little... It has a smidge more redneckery about it. It's sprinkled on.
It's not as bad as Irwin, though.
It's not as bad as Irwin. And anyone from Irwin, if you get offended, then you've never lived in your own hometown. Like, you know.
They have KKK, like, people still there, so...
Yeah, and like for reference point, the reason I'm allowed to say this is I went to Sullivan East High School.
Okay, you were like right smack dab in it.
That's right. 15 minutes from where I lived was a Cyclops in the KKK. That's a thing. That's a position. It's not a D&D character. No. In the KKK, Cyclops is something that you say not to insult someone who walks by with one eye. It's something that you say as like a, oh, that's a revered position. So, you know, we're allowed to make fun of that. That's how that works.
Anyway, so your friend was from Greenville, Tennessee. So we already laid the foundation of middle of Redneckville, you know.
I'm so glad that you're DMing this session and keeping this on track.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, you're over there eating and no, I'm kidding.
Dude, okay. Real talk, I am so hungry. Okay, because
I've gardening and everything. Garden all the time, all day.
Yeah. I do. Like, I've been gardening. I've been checking on my artichoke. Dude, all my artichoke died. I'm really sad about that.
I do gardening for our community garden for church. So I literally just got back right before we filmed this. So we're both probably sweaty and
How's that going, by the way? What are you guys growing?
We've got, so for anybody that cares, fast forward.
Let's not pretend. No. Let's not pretend. You are a personality. I'm a personality. We're interesting people.
Okay.
They're getting to know who we are.
That's true.
Tell me about your garden.
About the garden. So our church has a garden, and honestly, I think it's, I don't even know what the plot size is, but we've got tomatoes, we've got broccoli, cauliflower, squash, zucchini, think we did okra. I'm not quite sure. But the peppers, this last frost that we had completely destroyed them. We tried rescuing them. We had the tarps and stuff. So we've got like, I mean, we only planted like four of the peppers because not very many people cared about them. So we're just going to replace them. So it's not that bad. But the tomatoes are taken off. Like probably in the next few weeks, we're going to be able to see them coming through. And we went and weed-eated and got all that taken care of today. But yeah, no, we have awesome. We've got beans. We've got a bunch of different type of beans, like pinto beans, and I don't even know. I'm just there. Dude. I show up and they tell me what to do. That's kind of what.
Yo, if you have pinto beans, I'd love to trade with you. Okay, so plot twist for all y'all that are listening in
or watching.
I am someone who desperately cares about growing plants.
Uh-huh.
I love plants. I love plants more than most of my relatives. No offense to my relatives, but you know who you are. And like,
go ahead and pitch your business or whatever.
Okay, shameless plug. So I started a company. So my wife and I, we started working in 2016 on just gardening in general. There is something deeply spiritual about gardening. Mm-hmm. Because if you read the New Testament and you listen to Jesus speak, you can't listen to Jesus for long without encountering a farming narrative.
That's true.
He talks about, you know, like, right? Like, he talks about livestock, or he talks about seed, or he talks sheep. About plowing, or he talks about hiring garden workers, or sheep. That's exactly right. So, when Jesus speaks about life, he speaks about farming.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I realized, and this is just me being completely honest, what I realized is, I'm completely separated from the analogies that Jesus mm-hmm. used to describe the kingdom of heaven. And that messed with me. It did. It jacked me up. And I went, well, I guess I gotta start like growing stuff. Like because and I wanted to going already, closer but then to I had a new fervor. Do I now?
Oh, I was saying it's like feeling closer to him because like when I go out and garden, it's like you are able to just go through the motions and in a way you're first of all, you're getting closer to nature. You're able to kind of, it's almost a meditative thing, I guess. That's how it is with me is you can just, you know what to do. You're just out there shoveling or picking through dead leaves or pruning or wheat, pulling out weeds, but it's a repetitive process, and so you're able to kind of like just meditate and pray and just, and I don't know, it's a very peaceful process in a sense.
I fully agree. I've never told you this.
Okay.
Why don't we do it on record? That's fine. I used to do communion services with a couple of guys mm-hmm. in my garden.
Oh, cool.
Where
nope. Oh, that's weird. You still with me?
I don't know what happened. Are you there?
Yes, but the weird thing is we now have two boxes of you on my screen.
What?
So
you're outnumbered.
You're okay. So people that are watching or listening. Oh wait, now just got it meshed the same box together. So listen, technical difficulties, it happens.
Yeah,
you fused.
Oh, am I more powerful now?
I know. Amazing. Now you're two in one. So we'll go ahead and talk about your communion and then we're gonna double back and go talk about your lesbian friend and somehow connected to Ephesians. I guess.
Crap. I can do this. All right.
You're let's fine.
Do
this. Finish your communion thing.
So, last year I had the luxury of inviting a couple people to my garden. Mm-hmm. And my garden, for reference point, is like 1,400 square feet. So it's not like the biggest thing in the world, but it's good size. And what I would do is before we would work in the yard, I would sit them down and they'd take off their shoes. Mm-hmm. And what we would do is I would pick something that is abundant in the garden. And I would talk about how in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean, you know, region, The reason that bread and wine were present in the communion meditation that we see in the upper room was because it was the most abundant thing that was amongst people. They didn't have clean water. They had a lot of wine. They had a lot of bread. It was just what they had. And so what we would do is we would take and we would eat a carrot or a tomato, and we would say, taste and see the Lord is good. And we would enjoy that moment. And then what I do is I take them and we do some pruning, and we would talk about the wheat and the chaff. And then I would take them and do some seeding, and we would talk about the seeds cast upon the path. And then we would water, and we would talk about how Paul and Barnabas were present in the development of the people in the gospel. And the goal was to bring scripture to life.
Yeah.
The reason scripture isn't alive for people, in part, is because people shop at supermarkets and don't grow their own food. Mm-hmm. The gospel
is separated from everything.
That's right. And the first living creation wasn't us. The first living creation, the true living creation, was the earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the whole tangent that we're not talking about today.
That's okay. We can talk about Genesis another day.
Yes. We'll talk about Genesis, and we'll talk about Revelation, I think, 21, in like the same blow, and it'll be
fantastic. Oh, Lord. So, your lesbian friend. As he takes a bite. Chew and swallow. It's fine.
Thank you so much. Okay.
This is a hot mess of, no, I'm kidding. I enjoy it. I think this is actually going to be very entertaining for our listeners and viewers. So.
I think it will be. I mean, like, let's hope. I mean, I think you're entertaining. I think I'm, you know, at least mildly entertaining. So let's see what happens. I had this friend who, I said, remember all that crap you learned in English class? Mm-hmm. The who, the what, the where, the why?
Yes.
Use that and read the Bible. And like, the euphoria on her face, the idea that there was something that she had actually learned in school that could help her understand the Bible. She had never considered it. She'd been in church her whole life. But the Bible, because it's holy, feels so separate from our ability to critique it and examine it that it becomes this meaningless, lofty thing that we're supposed to revere and never understand.
Yep.
And that is, by definition, objectification.
It is. I mean, we want to be afraid of God and scripture and all that other stuff, but the more I've read it. Yeah, that is true. We are taught. And the more I've read it, the more I've learned about it. Context. It's kind of like tangent on my end. So growing up, I was afraid of storms, like terrified to the point I would get myself so worked up as a little kid, I would nearly vomit. And I was afraid that every time, yeah, I know, like I'm an anxious person. So every time it started thundering and lightning in my brain, I thought it was going to be a tornado. I live in Tennessee. We don't really have tornadoes. We're surrounded by mountains. I mean, we have,
no.
I mean, unless you go out to Greenville in the middle of like the plains and stuff or valleys, but that's mostly wind. But anyway, so I was terrified, but I found that, I don't know where it started, but I guess I read a book about it or something. But the more I read and learned about what causes tornadoes, the fear of it went away. And it was more of, okay, I don't really have to fear this because in order for, you know, this to happen, XYZ has to happen. And the likelihood of XYZ happening is not very possible, or at least not very common in our area. And it took that fear away. And then it actually made me be more interested in storms and just learning about it. And that's how it's been with the Bible for me. Of, I used to fear it and nearly despise it when I was agnostic/atheist. And now I've read about the context. I've read about the social norms and the societal understandings and why, what, who, all those things. And now I actually have more of a love and more of a reverence for it because it's not only a book that guides me through my faith, but it also tells me of broken people and stories and it's a history of where we came from. And I think if we can do that and just read it with the who, what, why, then we will be able to have a much more holiness to it than we otherwise give it.
Right, because holiness, no, I'm 100% on page with you. Like, I don't know if I even have the right words to express it, but
yeah,
what I'll just say plainly, the thing that we do to the Bible, that we're taught to do in the Bible because of the way we go to church, is useless. The thing we're supposed to do is feel and experience a legitimate connection to God and people. And if the way that we have come to understand the Bible makes us feel like we're separate from God, separate from people, it requires a critical examination.
Yeah. I mean, think about it this way. Throughout the Bible, they're always talking about help those that are less fortunate, help the poor, help the needy, help the outcast, all of this other stuff. And your statement of this is about an experience, God is always guiding us back to helping our fellow man, yet oftentimes we neglect that aspect. We're meant to have that experience with them.
Yeah.
Especially now, like, with all of these, you know, murders going on with black men and like George Floyd, all that other stuff. That could be a whole other episode, but it's like, why as Christians? And the messed up part is most of the time I'm seeing these strong Christians or people that claim to have a strong Christian faith are the ones that are the most against people that are marginalized. And so I don't get it.
I mean,
I started something. I'm sorry.
What you've done is you just triggered my liberation theology bone, where it's just like, fundamentalists that are more white-leaning, ignoring racial tension, ignoring the immigrant, have abandoned their hearts to Satan.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just going to throw it out like when someone, the moment that Christianity became owned by the greatest empire, instead of being the voice for the downtrodden, we lost the point of Christianity, which is that God aligns with the marginalized. Totally. God aligned with the Jew who had no value in the Roman Empire. God aligned with the Gentile, even in the context of Jews being the chosen. And so when we look at the world and we see this like, America is great and we're the Christian nation. Bullshit. Like, the thing.
Call it out.
The truth. I just, like the truth is that God would not be for the majority of Americans.
I've got a
God
question.
God would be for the marginalized American.
How do you feel if you see a cross painted like the American flag?
I think that is closer to what Revelation talks about as the mark of the beast than any of this microchip shit that we keep talking about.
Yeah.
I'm being honest. Like this symbol I think that patriotism.
Jesus wasn't a capitalist, first of all. Anyway, that's my own.
Okay. All right.
He had to stand up now.
I gotta walk outside. I gotta walk outside.
You're a pacer.
I'm a pacer. Like,
don't go too far from your Wi-Fi or it's gonna disconnect.
That's right. That happened before, didn't it?
Okay. Yeah, it did.
Jesus would flip Wall Street the way he did tables in the temple.
Yes.
Jesus. Okay.
We're going to have to part two this. We're almost at 40 minutes, so.
Are we really? Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. You never talked about your lesbian. Oh, no, you did. You did talk about your lesbian friend in the
Yeah. She felt a genuine relief to understand the things she learned in her, you know, English class could be useful in the Bible. And it can. Yes, okay. So if you get nothing from this podcast except the who, what, when, where, and why of your English class can help you read the Bible, well, that's useful. I'm glad you got that. Okay. Nationalism is racism on a border scale. Like, the blacks don't drink here is the same evil as we need to protect against the Russian Red Scare. It's the same evil. Yeah. It's the same thing, but we're deciding a different category to decide who is the good and who is the bad. And of course, I mean, obviously the good is whatever I am.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. As this, you know, this perfect white American, I mean, we need to protect America from the Chinaman after Pearl Harbor. We need to protect our white women through this propaganda campaign against the rapist black man. You know, we need to protect sanctity of marital values against all the gays.
All the gays, like,
the gays, and they're just like, they watch CNN and listen to jazz music, smoked marijuana, and next thing you know, they were just, you know, they were gay. It just happened. It was so sad.
I wonder how jazz music got a part of that.
That's a whole different story. If you want to talk about the history of jazz music, I don't even know if this is a podcast for it, but I would totally get into it with you because it's a racially charged bullshit campaign, and I mean it. Okay. The reason white Americans who are claim Christianity cannot mourn the death of black men is because it would mean mourning the failure of an institution of their Christian nation.
Wow.
And they can't mourn something that they believe is perfect. Their whole faith would fall apart the moment America does.
Yeah.
It's because they have bought into a false idol of nationalism. They have forsaken Jesus for the sake of this, this voting monarchy that somehow is representative of the new Israel.
Oh, Lord. Oh.
but it's true. Like, the moment that a white evangelical Christian starts questioning the foundations of the public police force put in stake by our God-placed president, they
oh, no,
start
that's
unraveling.
Another whole other thing about the president being sovereign or whatever.
Oh, yeah, you know, because clearly in the first and second century, when they were talking about the sovereign placement of authority figures, they were obviously talking about Donald Trump.
Oh, my God, that makes me sick.
That was the point. Like, and the truth is, and I know this, the truth is most people that vote Republican now just think that they're doing well enough to keep the world from aborting more babies. That's their whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's their whole thing. I get it. But what they're doing is deciding that there is one moral stance that they're holding as an absolute that outweighs how born people are treated. Mm-hmm. And the outweighs the way that entire people groups have been treated. And if there's one thing that a Christian should be outraged by, in my opinion, this is a me, when liars claim Christianity to get your vote, you should call bullshit. And you should call it the first time. And for some reason, and I don't know why, mm-hmm. we're willing to pretend the emperor has clothes on.
I
don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you. There's a lot of people that, so I put out a tweet on my personal page today because I was just so enraged because of, first of all, we've got George Floyd. We've got, there was a black trans man that was just killed today. There was somebody else that was thrown from a balcony by police officers either today or yesterday. And it's just, it's continually happening. And all of these posts that I see just telling what's happening, then you've got these Trump supporters coming in. All they're saying is Trump 2020 or Demitard or Democrats or liberals are diseased and all this other stuff. And it's like, so you're not even going to address the issue. You're just going to sit there and say hashtag Trump 2020. Or if you talk about racism, people are automatically saying hashtag Trump 2020. And it speaks to what that campaign is talking about. If you just mention marginalization and all of a sudden they're thinking that you're talking about them, it's like, maybe I am, because obviously you think I am. But anyway, I posted on my personal Twitter was, I can't remember what I said, but basically, whenever Trump tweets or says anything, do you guys fact check him? Or do you just listen to what he says? And I think that that can also play into the church to kind of wrap it back into, I guess, our theme of, do you go off of what your pastor or what your congregation tells you to believe, or do you go searching for the answer yourself just to fact check your faith? And whether we're talking about politics or church or whatever, a lot of us just go off of what we're told our whole lives. Santa is real until proven otherwise kind of situation. It's take your beliefs into your own hands.
Yeah, it's, you know, it'll probably be next episode, so I'll try to like put a bow on this, but
okay, yes, we'll end it with a nice little package.
what we're gonna have to encounter when we talk about Romans next week is we're gonna have to encounter the reality that the Bible imposes relative morality.
Okay,
that's gonna be hard for some people. Like the Bible does a very if this then that. It does that. It's just like, if it's good for you, then it's good. Like, that happens in the New Testament. It happens. Mm-hmm. And it's relevant. And if we're gonna take a theological point from Romans, we're gonna have to deal with where Romans lands, because it's how letters are written. Mm-hmm. It's written for the conclusion. It's written for where you lead people to. And one of the things that Paul does is he leads us to a place, and the place is one where we deal with, some people are going to think about righteousness differently. Mm-hmm. And God's going to support that.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's appropriate. Well, good. I'm glad you agree. It's very much a thing in Romans. Very much a thing. It's, if there is a point to the New Testament, it's, hey, if you think you're 100% right, you should know that God wants you to chill out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And be in a stance of your mission, if you are right, if you're the right in this one, is to be a missionary of acceptance to the other. And the other of the New Testament is the Gentile. And that is where Romans lands.
I agree. Yeah, I'm making notes so that I know what we talked about so that I can talk about next period. But I like that this entire episode has been about, I mean, we kind of jumped around a lot, but that's, I mean, it wouldn't be us without that. But we talked about, you know, Ephesians, we talked about marginalization, we talked about politics and sovereignty of presidency, and we just talked about all these things that can ostracize people and can make it worse for people that are naturally marginalized. And the fact that we're able to wrap it back into how Paul talked about in Romans, that the whole point of the Bible, the whole point of what God wanted, was the fact of inclusion, bringing people that are marginalized back into the fold, and being a shepherd, being, you know, working ministry or outreach to these people. And I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, I think something we have to deal with as Christians, mm-hmm, that are trying to navigate this climate is both parties believe they're being marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. I'm a classic Southern liberal, super progressive, like, take all the stereotypes. Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
100% the whole way. And that's me. You nailed it. Put me in your after school special. And I genuinely believe that liberal people and the people that liberal people represent are being marginalized. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I gotta be honest, my parents, very conservative people, very conservative. They genuinely believe conservatives are marginalized. Mm-hmm. They genuinely believe that with attention to the minorities, that whites are marginalized. They actually believe that. And so I think the teaching at the end of Romans has a great opportunity right now to tell us, hey, let's stop talking about who's right and wrong. Let's talk about how to deal with it.
Yeah, stop the us versus them.
That's exactly right. And I'm guilty of that. And I think, and here's the thing, out of faithfulness to God and people, I believe I should represent who I believe is part of it. Here's the kicker, though. And I hate to admit this. The Trump supporter that believes that whites are marginalized is probably doing their greatest work of faithfulness they can consider. I don't like it. I disagree with it. I don't like it. I think they're wrong. I think they're morally incorrect.
Yeah.
But they're trying to be faithful.
Yeah. And that's where it's hard to combat that.
Yeah. So what we'll learn from Romans is that God's measure is so beyond right and wrong that it leans exclusively into efforts of faithfulness, true faithfulness. And when we encounter this faithfulness, we encounter something beautiful. We encounter forgiveness for where we get it wrong because the effort was for us to do as our greatest work of faithfulness to God. And that's what Romans teaches. And we'll encounter that next week.
Cool. I think that is great to end that on then. So I'm going to just kind of end it here, and then we'll see you next week with our next episode, where we'll be talking more about Romans and talking about relative morality, destroying appeasement religion, all that fun stuff, and whatever else decides that we decide to go on tangents about, which honestly, you can expect that every episode, to be honest.
You really can. And honestly, like, this is our fault, Alex. We haven't talked on a podcast in a while.
Yeah.
And so I think we just had a lot of fuel for that fire.
We did.
The fire wasn't ready.
That is true. We've missed, like, we've tried to schedule this week 3 or 4 times in the past, like, month or something. And just, I'll get migraines or something will happen. And so I think that it was needed for us to be able to get together and do something like this. So, all right. So for our listeners, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Check us out at queerchristianfamilyvalues.com for more information. Follow us on all our socials. Check out Andrew Cox's Instagram and all that other stuff. We'll put all the fun things in the show notes. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.